It's Monday, and that means we're talking about family here on The Takeaway. Well, last week, after the case of Phoebe Prince, who was bullied at her school and then committed suicide in Massachusetts, we talked about that case and the victims of bullying, and we want to advance that conversation now by talking about bullies and their parents. Lisa Belkin is a Takeaway contributor and motherlode blogger for our partner, The New York Times. And also with us is Fran Bell Baruch, a freelance writer and publisher of MerloMom.com. Lisa, you went to this issue, and I'm sure you've spoken many times or written many times about victims of bullying, but you decided to examine the parents of the bullies themselves. Why?
Well, because it was the one last question. I mean, there was a lot of talk about how does a child become a victim? How do these kids become the bullies? And what did the teachers do? What did the administrators know? And then there's the question of, and how about the parents? What did they know? What did they do? What could they have done? What did they do to cause it?
So that's a really good question for Fran. Fran, I want you to read you a comment that was from Lisa's Motherlode blog. S. McGrath wrote, children absorb their parents. This is actually on our website over the weekend. We've been asking people about who's to blame for bullying. S. McGrath wrote, children absorb their parents' words and observe their actions from the moment they're born. If a child comes from a home in which racist, bigoted phraseology, snobbish put-downs, and mean comments, then they're going to grow up to bully those around them. Clearly, blaming the parents when bullying occurs, and that has to be very difficult for you to hear, but you must hear it all the time.
Well, I hear it, of course. And I don't think she's wrong, but I also just don't think that's the only way it happens. I think it's too easy sometimes to blame the parents for everything when every situation is different. It's a scary subject, bullying, and I think, you know, commenters are trying to latch on to a simple solution for something that's a complex problem, and it has, you know, it's more difficult than that.
Well, let me ask you about your own complex problem. You have a child 8 years old, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, now he's 9.
Okay, now he's 9. But when he was 8 years old, he started coming home and telling you that he was bullying kids at school.
Yeah, there was one particular kid. It was one particular situation that went on for a little while last year where the boy, he had been having some personal issues with this boy anyway and his behavior, and it started translating over to the playground where he was disrupting basketball games and he was having temper tantrums and saying and changing rules on the other players and then tattling on those other players to the coaches. And he was causing a lot of problems and the kids weren't able to play their games. And my son was the one who was more verbal in terms of expressing his frustration.
How did you react when you found out that your kid was bullying other kids, and what did you do about it?
Well, he was bullying this one particular kid, and he was the one who told me. I didn't hear about it from anybody else. I heard it from him, and I think he was part bragging and part kind of seeking my help, you know, in terms of how to deal with it. And I basically did what I thought I should do, you know, which was tell him, you know, look, you know, you need to put yourself in his shoes and figure out why he's feeling this way and why he's frustrated and try to work with him. You need to, you know, just because somebody else exhibits bad behavior doesn't mean that that's okay for you to, you know, exhibit bad behavior or do something wrong. And, you know, those kind of things, put yourself in his shoes, all that stuff that we know and we say as parents all the time. But the frustration for me was, it wasn't getting through. He was so angry, and it was so raw, and it was happening every day that what I was telling him just wasn't powerful enough. You know, it wasn't practical enough. It didn't change anything. So it was frustrating, and I went to the coaches, and I went to happened to have been a parenting expert panel at my temple, and I went to that and I sought help, but I really didn't get any more than I already knew myself, and it was very frustrating. I couldn't take it to the next step.
Well, Lisa, help, maybe you can help me and help Fran here to understand this. Do we know what makes kids bully?
Oh, we have all sorts of theories about what makes kids bully, and a lot of them contradict each other. I mean, the Bully Free program says that it's mostly low self-esteem, that the kids who bully are trying to pump themselves up. They don't think much of themselves. But the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, their Stop Bullying campaign says, no, these are kids who have more than average self-esteem. And I think it's because it depends situation to situation. I would add the element of power in there, that a lot of the bullying we're seeing in Massachusetts, different from what Fran is describing with her son, seem to be about, I am powerful and I am going to use that power because, frankly, it's worthless to me if I don't use it as a teenager trying to find my place in the world.
But
so it's very complicated.
Lisa, is it possible that it's both of those things? Is it possible that you sometimes have a sort of, I don't want to say ringleader, but kind of the leader of a group of aggressive kids who has very high self-esteem, and then you have a group of kids surrounding that person who has low self-esteem, and that's why they're following along with this other person?
And then add the ringleaders using their power. Yes, I think it's probably a different motivation for each kid involved. And that's what makes it hard to fight.
Fran, has your son continued, or is the situation been resolved?
No, I think our situation was, quote-unquote, situational. He hasn't exhibited it since, and I don't know whether that's because what I said to him ultimately sank in or just because the situation ended up diffusing itself. I don't know. It's been a year, and he hasn't exhibited it, so I'm hoping that it's maturity and maybe he's understanding things a little bit better, but I don't know.
Lisa, you know, people often assume that it's the parents' fault when a kid is behaving badly, and I'm perfectly willing to accept that that's sometimes true. But is it counterproductive when that's our initial reaction, our knee-jerk reaction, is to blame the parents?
It's easy to blame the parents because then you can say, well, they did X and I would never do X and therefore I'm safe. That's always our first goal, is to show why we would never end up in this awful situation. It doesn't necessarily help because it's only sometimes true. I think that Columbine taught us that it is possible for your children to be out there doing things that you are completely and totally unaware of, and that good parents end up with children who are doing awful things. That said, parents need to constantly be keeping in their head their awareness that maybe their kids are out there doing awful things, and, you know, an ear toward how are your children talking about other classmates. Is there a disdain? Is there a glee? An ear to that would have helped in this particular situation.
Okay, Lisa Belkin, takeaway contributor, also motherload blogger for our partner, The New York Times. Fran Bell-Baruch is the writer and publisher of MerlotMom.com. She joined us from Los Angeles, California.